You're listening to Rambling Business, the only multimedia podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about attaching to a legacy to start your own. We leave our California micro-distillery business, which is sad for me.
Yes.
I like a little drink once in a while. And we're going to drive down after a responsible amount of time so that we've become sober to Southern California to begin our new series, Cowabunga Malibu Business. Now, most of you know Malibu from vintage surfing movies.
That's right. Annette Funicello.
What?
Annette Funicello. Annette Funicello. You don't know who that is.
Oh, no. I was thinking that cello part.
that's the limoncello.
Limoncello.
Yeah, Annette Funicello and limoncello. Now, there is a connection there.
But most of you only know Malibu from surfing movies, right? But we'll travel into the canyons, which is another huge part of Malibu, and see where other businesses flourish also, besides just the surf scene.
Right.
Today, we're going to visit the Cornell Winery in Cornell, California, where Rick had a chance to chat with Tim Skogstrom, and see how he started the Cornell Winery on the backbone of local history, of which there's much back there. Also coming your way are some business tips, a travel tip, and of course, our tax tale.
My wife Judy and I have been visiting the Cornell Winery and the Old House Restaurant for years. It was actually introduced to us by our cousins, Ann and Rich.
Oh, yeah.
Many
Uncle
years ago.
Rich.
Yes. And it's in this canyon that's not right next to Los Angeles.
No.
And it's been noted as one of the best restaurants around. And the wine, which is associated with it, they work in tandem, is great. And they're all local wines that they offer. And when they talk about local wines, it's not just in Malibu, which there is wine there, but also up the Central Coast, too, because they're only a couple hours
just
away.
Just within California.
Right. So I had a chance to talk to Tim, the owner of the wine, the Cornell Winery, and also partner of the restaurant. And he's been in wine and restaurant industry for 25 years, a long time. And what was very interesting is that I saw him. I walked in. Place is packed. It's just absolutely packed, the winery. And there's this guy walked by me. He's carrying these cases out. And he kind of looked at the agent. It could be the owner. So we kind of went to the counter and we bought some a glass of wine and some cheese, and I said, I'm here. I have an appointment with Tim, and she said, okay, sit over there. I'll let him know. Well, that was him. The guy who was carrying all the boxes out, you know, and I told him. I said, it reminded me when I worked in our family's restaurant in Culver City of all the boxes I used to carry and cases of everything, and he said, well, what was it? And I said, the Villa Italian. He said, I know it. He said that was my district, but I didn't get them because your restaurant because somebody else already got before me. But I knew Albert Vera, who was the mayor of Culver City, my grandfather used to take to medical school before he had to drop out to take care of his family restaurant. So he knew all this history of where I grew up, which was very interesting. And we're now 40 miles away talking about this. So he had mastered the wine distribution business. And he received the best advice from his former boss of all people, director Francis Ford Coppola.
The director, now winemaker, now also still director? Does he still direct?
You know what? I don't know. I've only seen him once, standing next to him waiting for a car at a valet. That was it.
Yeah.
We were at a motel.
You didn't ask him?
I didn't ask him.
Do you still make movies or is it just wine?
we were on Sunset Boulevard waiting for our cars to be picked up, but that was about it. But anyway, Francis, what he did is, and why I'm telling you a story is because this is really instrumental in what Tim did, is that Francis bought history when he purchased Inglenook Winery, which was founded in 1880, which is amazing. Because
they drank wine back then, just whiskey.
That's right, yeah. And at that time, very few people knew or appreciated Inglenook as the first California. Where are we?
Well, we're talking about the 1800s, so California.
California.
California. Sourdoughs.
They were the first California winery to win awards in Paris decades ago. Now, Francis, now I assume I could call him Francis since we were both waiting for a valet at the same time.
I don't think he'd want you to call him Ford. It'd be confusing.
But he worked hard, starting with the purchase of the main vineyard, you know, Inglenook, and the home of where Gustav Neobaum, the founder of Inglenook, actually lived, you know. So he really started at the ground level trying to bring this history back to life. And after acquiring the lands, he purchased the brand name in 2011 and turned this lowly regarded wine into a world-class competitor again. And Tim was working there. He was like the distributor, you know, the main guy of sales, you know, the male sales distributor kind of thing. That's what he knew best.
Yeah.
And so he took the same strategy from Francis, and he latched on to the Cornell town in the Runyon family histories. And this is very interesting because now Francis is looking at Northern California, Napa Valley, and he's doing this with a local legend. And now Tim is doing this with like a local legendary area down here in Southern California. So Cornell, California, not to be mixed up with Cornell University, even though it's the same person.
Yeah, that was the most interesting thing for me because in the 1800s and the early 1900s, the community didn't have the money for a school.
Right.
And so they wrote Cornell of Cornell University fame and said, hey, can you help us out? And he sent a box of books and a syllabus. And so they named the town after him.
And, you know, some of these people that relocated out here to Cornell back in the 1800s, I think they were from New York. So they had a connection there, I guess. But
which is so funny because New York is named after York in England. So New York.
All right. And so so basically, like you said, he shifted the boxes of books out, and they named the town after him, which is this great legacy of why I always wondered why it was named that. I didn't know that until I met Tim. So in 2006, Tim worked with the Runyon family property owners to open up a 20-year-old unused building next to the restaurant as a winery.
It was
a building
they built. The old house?
No.
Oh.
It's next to the old house.
Darn.
The old house. No. The old house was before that, I guess. And so this building was next to that, but it wasn't even being used. And so he said, well, you know, we'll turn this into a winery, and I have all this experience, and let's do this, you know, and I can kind of work with you guys, you know, in that restaurant, you know, on distribution, you know, providing them wine. But in 2009 is when he actually did partner with the Runyon family to reopen the old house restaurant.
So the old house, and it was probably the old warehouse that he opened first?
Well, the point was is that the Runyon family, the patriarch that actually ran the restaurant, he really didn't have a lot of business coming in there because he had people like Steve McQueen and Sam, the guy who was a cowboy, Sam.
Don't know. You're asking the wrong guy. The only cowboy I know is Marion, whatever John Wayne's real name is. You see, I should have had the full name before I said whatever his real name is.
I know. His first name
is Marion.
This is why this is an unedited podcast.
Yeah.
We're not like these people that have these high-priced engineers.
Yeah.
No. But all these entertainers that would be living there in Malibu Lake area.
And so these come by neat. Secluded. There's all these canyons, and you got these beautiful views. And it was a big movie star. Still is a big movie star place.
Yeah. Exactly.
Doesn't Arnold have a house up there?
I heard. Yeah, somewhere where the backbone trail was. But anyway, he opened this restaurant up, reopened it, and it just took off. You know, both of them. Now, remember, they're in tandem. You have the winery, and you have the, it's not a winery where they grow their own grapes. They are like a wine distribution. They're a wine tasting house.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll make sure I get that straight. And so I seem to use the term winery so much as we've done so many wineries, but it's a wine tasting house, which represents that whole area and the history and the house, you know, the old house restaurant working together. And again, you know, we got there, it was packed, and it's hard to even get reservations at the old house. You got to call ahead of time, like weeks ahead of time to get reservations sometime, because it's not really, really big, but it's a great place to eat. But anyway, what he did is he combined his knowledge that he gained as an employee and the history of the area, and he recreated this unique experience, which is about 45 minutes from downtown LA. No traffic.
Yeah.
No course. Traffic.
17 hours in traffic.
That's right. But it's a great place to get away from.
And if you want to learn more about the Cornell Winery, you can at www.cornellwinery.com. You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com. And now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you about strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales.
And today's is a particularly weird one, at least to my eye. Malibu is known for being hot.
Yes. You know?
So when you get away from the beach, you know, you get into these canyons and the air can be, it's a very warm area, which is why it's good for growing wine. So the one thing that you want in Cornell, California, is shade from the Malibu sun. But that's not true everywhere. Not even all hot places, because if you've ever been to Venice, Italy, you know, that's very hot, you know, kind of muggy too. But in 1993 in Venice, Italy, a tax on the shadow was introduced. And not
who knows
the shadow
what
knows
lurks not, in the not, hearts of men.
Not the 50s radio serial. Actual shadows. This was a type of budgetary payment tax, basically, that tax cafes and restaurants which are near to municipal buildings that are using their shadows as shade. Just like, why? Just tax every just tax every cafe. Why make it a weird, like, I don't know, if someone there with like drawing in chalk where, oh, does how much of the shadow hits the tables? I don't know.
You know, our Italian relatives have got to be involved in this somehow.
Yeah, cause it seems like an Italian scheme for anything. The convoluted weird stuff that goes on in Italy. But basically, the taxes are levied equally on cloudy and sunny days.
Oh.
So, I don't know. I guess they don't own the clouds? I have no idea. It's a weird one. And now it's time for our travel tip, where we tell you what fun things you can do in Malibu.
If you like the outdoors, the Santa Monica Mountains have a very unique trail. The Backbone Trail begins near Sunset Boulevard, which is pretty famous, Sunset Boulevard, in LA County. Right. This one actually is in Pacific Palisades, where it begins.
Oh, okay.
And at Will Rogers State Historical Park. I don't know if you remember that. We took you there as a little kid. But yeah,
I've been to a lot of state parks. We're lucky in California to we have a lot of them.
Yeah, actually, Will Rogers is the only place I know of locally you could see a polo.
Oh, horses. Yeah. No, I do remember it now.
You remember it?
People riding horses.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like stampeding by, you know, like 15 feet from you. It's amazing.
Ugh, whole ground changing. Crazy sport. What do you need? Like four horses? One for each quarter or something ridiculous like that?
Well, that would be a quarter horse then.
Get out of here.
Anyway, the trail ends at Point Magoo State Park in Ventura County, which is 67 miles away. And we know this trail well because your mother and I, when we used to volunteer and patrol on horseback for the National Park Service and the State Park Service, we used to ride the Backbone Trail almost every weekend. Sometimes it was every weekend. Anyway, there are beautiful views of the Pacific Ocean. There was times when we'd be on the Backbone Trail and we could see seven islands.
Oh, all of the
Channel Islands and Catalina. And also San Nicolas Island and one of the other little ones that are out there. I forgot what it was called. But, you could see Santa Barbara Island. That was the other one. So there's lots of little islands you can see. You could find lots of things like shady canyons, wildflowers, flowing water. It's very diverse because it goes up and down to that mountain. And if you want to know how to get there, you could get the map off the Santa Monica Mountains National Park Service site, which will show you over a dozen places along the trail that you can park your car. So you don't have to park your car at one end and walk the whole thing.
You don't have to walk 67 miles and then walk back 67 miles.
Right, right. There's like dozens of places, over a dozen places where you could park your car, because we used to ride our horses right across those parking lots to get to the trail.
Mm-hmm. And now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what steps you can implement to do what we've been talking about on the podcast. And the first thing to think of is study the history of your local area. Many people think the USA is a young country, and compared to some other places, seemingly it is, except there's a whole bunch of history, not only in California with the Gold Rush, but before that with the indigenous people and all of the thousands of years of history that Native Americans have had in this country. Tim, for example, discovered a unique and almost forgotten history of Cornell and the Old House, and talked about that history to, bring some sort of interesting spark to his business.
The second thing is connect one or more parts of that history that Brandon's telling you about with skills that you may have acquired as an employee or maybe as a business owner. Tim drew from his wine distribution and restaurant history of over 20 years and was able to put that together with the history and create something.
The third thing to think about is to draw a linear line from the history to a passion you have and how you can supplement that legacy by creating your own. This is where Tim figured out a lovely history of winemaking in this tiny place that nobody knew about anymore, and connected that to his own loves of distributing wine and running restaurants.
Right. And the last thing is design a business plan, a strategic plan, and how to connect these dots. Now, you've heard us say this a lot.
Because that's very important.
That's right. That, you know, and these dots, you know, what are these dots you're talking about? You know, because we have nothing visual here. The dots are history, experience, passion, and your vision. So connect all these things together with your business plan and your strategic plan to put something on paper and tangible, and then follow it.
And now it's time to answer an email for one of our listeners. Gina writes this week, should I buy assets or stock when acquiring an existing company?
Gina, we get this question every now and then because businesses buy businesses, there's acquisitions. And first of all, you should always have an attorney involved, especially a tax attorney. That's really important. I've seen people have contract attorneys and not tax attorneys and make some very serious mistakes.
Precarious not to know what you're going to have to pay in taxes.
But just to give you a basic thumbnail sketch of the differences is that when you buy the assets, you're like buying the company name. You could buy the furniture, fixtures, equipment, the building. You could buy things like that. But you're not buying the actual stock or ownership in the company because you may want to change the name anyway if you don't want to buy the name, for example. On the other hand, if you're buying stock, you're stepping into the shoes of your predecessor. So let's say you're buying this restaurant that's incorporated, and all of a sudden, after you buy it, 3 months later, you find out there's a lawsuit, and you're kind of stuck. Now, you talk to your attorney, but I'm sure you could probably go back to the previous owner, but if the previous owner doesn't have any money or something, then you got a problem. So when you buy the stock of a company, you're acquiring their problems. So that's something to keep in mind when doing that.
That's all we have for this week. Tune in next week when we're going to continue our Cowabunga Malibu business by hopping on some horses. Until then, I'm Brandon.
This is Rick, and thank you for letting us get into your business no matter where it is. Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music composition and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.